Radio Netherlands, where great minds just want to listen, learn, and react.
Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hilversum 3 bestond nog weer. Maar ieder had zijn eigen stem. Op elke steiger klonk een leer. Van Paljas op Jeruzalem.
There's a reason to be different this week. But let me start by warning you that a contest is wrapped into this show. The answers are two, so if you listen carefully, you should have no problem. We're in a festive mood here, which, come to think of it, might explain Jonathan's outrageous tie, which may also be annoying viewers at home.
Oh, really? I suppose any viewers with a colour set. You don't like my taste in ties?
It's different. It says more than you think.
Oh, thanks for the compliment. Anyway, back to the programme. We digress.
By the way, the reason for playing that music by Herman van Veen a few seconds ago is because this week it's 30 years since the national pop music channel Hilversum 3 was created on 11th of October 1965 in response to the pirate stations broadcasting from the North Sea. And on October 13th, it's 50 years since Holland resumed Dutch language broadcasts to Indonesia after the war. Here's what it sounded like.
Hier herreizend Nederland met onze eerste dagelijkse uitzending over de korte golfzender PCJ op 19,71 meter, speciaal bestemd voor alle land- en rijksgenoten buiten het vaderland. Goedemiddag Nederlanders, waar ook ter wereld. Luisteraars, Nederland spreekt weer tot Indië. Alle overzeese gebiedsdelen van het Rijk kunnen weer door de ether worden bereikt. In deze eerste werelduitzending van Nederland.
The voice behind that rather emotional broadcast turns out to be Frits Tors, a well-known broadcaster here in the Netherlands.
On the 13th of October 1945, I had to direct the show, I had to make the announcement, I had to read part of the news, and that was, as a matter of fact, our first link with the Dutchmen waiting for their repatriation in the Jap camps. And we got some very nice letters after that, and people who heard Holland for the first time.
Well, as you may recall from a program we broadcast on May the 4th, when Holland resumed broadcast to Indonesia in 1945, it was as Radio Horizon Nederland, Radio Resurgent Netherlands, because at that time the people running the broadcasting business hoped that public broadcasting here would be organised in the same way as in Britain. However, the pre-war system of each segment of Dutch society having access to the airwaves had a lot of political support, and it didn't take long for the single national broadcasting model to collapse.
There was an exception made for international broadcasting, and that explains why in 1947 the Radio Netherlands Foundation was established. And this is the station you're listening to at the moment, albeit with different aims and objectives than back in the 40s. During the colonial era, European governments quickly discovered that shortwave radio was a good way to enforce the links between the colonies and the mother country.
Radio Netherlands is currently making plans to celebrate the 50th anniversary in 1997 with a number of special projects which are being finalised at the moment. It will also be the 70th anniversary since the Netherlands started regular shortwave transmissions in the form of PCJJ. Some of those documents that we're unearthing from the archives will be put on show in a special part of the Internet Worldwide web pages that are presently under construction.
Back to the present, and let's have a quick skim through the letters. Clive Bedwell in Eastbourne in the UK says he's been a long-time listener to RTL's rock radio service on Astra's Transponder 52. He's dismayed that it has now toned down the service and renamed it Kink FM.
Well, we call Veronica Radio on your behalf, Clive. They've now taken over the station as part of a deal with RTL, and they tell us there are no plans to revive the rock radio service. It didn't score well enough amongst the Dutch public, Partly, I think, because it's limited to a cable service.
This Thursday afternoon, Veronica has a press conference to explain details of its news radio service on 1395 kilohertz. It should start full programming this coming Monday, October 16th.
Donald Davis at the University of Utrecht wants to know if we've updated the receiver shopping list recently. The answer is that we haven't done a full revision since December 1993, although that is in the works. We'll have an online and a printed version towards the end of this year. We're waiting to see what impact some new receivers will make during December. Meantime, individual reviews are available in printed form and also on our internet pages.
A couple of updates to pass on from previous programs. Victor Gunatilica reported that Radio Tanzania was back on 15435 kHz after a long absence. We had a fax from the South African organization Centec, who operates the Meyerton transmitting station in South Africa. They tell us that Radio Tanzania is actually being broadcast from South African soil, but on a temporary basis. Radio Tanzania is unable to reach all of its own territory before the general election due on October 29th. So programs are being relayed from South Africa until the 1st of December. 15435 kHz is used from 9 to 11 hours and 13 to 1525 UTC. 7280 runs from 1530 to 1655 and again from 18 to 2115 UTC. In the morning, 7290 kHz carries Radio Tanzania from 03 to 0455 UTC.
So listen while you can. The other update is via BBC Monitoring, who've noted a newspaper report on the inauguration of a brand new shortwave transmitter site for the Voice of Turkey. That's at Demirle, south of Ankara. Five transmitters, each of 500 kilowatts, have now entered service to boost the Turkish language service, plus 16 others. At this point, we bring up the line to Bernd Erfurt, who lives in Kristiansand, Norway, who has a reminder about a recurring event on shortwave. But it involves some students in Trondheim, Norway. They have unique plans.
Yes, they are. And the student radio station, which is in Norwegian called Ukesanon, will be broadcasting on shortwave, medium wave, and locally on FM.
Now, I understand the FM is already up and running, as it were, but what about the shortwave and medium wave?
They told me that it will be on the air as soon as they have it ready to to put on the switch. I believe they will put it on probably 1 week prior to the Reg Week opening, which is on October 20th.
So, any time now, as it were. And what about the frequencies?
The frequencies told to me was 7215 kilohertz shortwave with 300 watts, and on medium wave, 1485 kilohertz, also on 300 watts.
And what sort of antenna?
The interesting thing is the shortwave frequency will be radiated from our two-element Yagi antenna on top of our large building. So this probably will propagate quite good into various parts of the world. It will also be directional, of course, and they are planning to direct the signal in different target areas.
Are they on the air 24 hours a day?
Yes, they are. They are going to be 24-hour operated, and when they are not having ordinary programs, they will have a kind of a tape running with music and announcements. So they will be 24 hours.
Now, they did this 2 years ago. Did they get any response?
Mostly on shortwave, because the medium wave transmitter is not that good antenna-wise. It's an inverted V antenna, not so high above the ground. But I think they got lots of reports for the shortwave transmissions.
Well, we'll see what happens. I can hear some other voices in the background. Are those your kids?
Yes, it's my youngest daughter.
Well, give her our regards.
More information from the Academic Radio Club, P.O. Box 250N-7034 in Trondheim, Norway. Or give them a call on 47 for Norway and then 7350-9410. Once again, that's 47-7350-9410. I'm curious to hear how far they got out.
Talking of numbers, on October 10th, many of the phone numbers in Holland change so that we all have 10 figures. And the PTT has enough numbers to last us for around 15 years. The monopoly of the PTT will be broken here in 1998, when others can offer telephone services too. Radio Netherlands' answer line number is now 31356724222, open 24 hours a day. And so, let's see what's in the voicemail box.
Mailbox. Password. You have two new voice messages. Message 1.
This is Tim Hendel in Miami. I really enjoyed the report on the wind-up clockwork radio, and I hope that Media Network will not only test the radio, but tell us where we can buy one. I also really continue to enjoy Victor Gunatilica's comments about the availability or non-availability of technology in third world countries. Thanks a lot.
Message 2, from an external number.
This is Dr. Waldron Lynch from Athboy, Ireland. We get excellent reception of Radio Netherlands from the Astra satellite. Thank you.
End of message.
Isn't technology wonderful? Just a point to Tim and several other callers. We will be testing the radio when it comes out. The wholesaler in the Netherlands says they expect the first shipment from South Africa to arrive in 2 weeks. And each set will cost 179 guilders, and that's around $100, of which 5 guilders goes to subsidize a program to give free radios away in Africa. Once again, we've seen the clockwork generator demonstrated at the Radio Netherlands Towards 2000 conference in Amsterdam a few weeks back. We also saw a prototype radio perform. We haven't tested a production model yet. No one has.
Also, a quick message to Tony Wartham, who writes a technical column for the Bangkok Post newspaper. Tony, the clockwork module will last for 6,000 hours before the spring breaks, but you have to wind it for 35 seconds each time to get the radio to play for 40 minutes. Expect some email from us.
The line to Invercargill, New Zealand is in. So here's Arthur Cushion's Pacific Media Update. What have we got first, Arthur?
Palau and KHBN has been testing its new equipment and very good signals here on 9965. We've been hearing them as early as 0730 in English, announcement in English and Chinese at 0800. And they're still audible right through our night at 1800 UTC. They're still in operation. KHBN lists two other frequencies for test, 9730 and 9985 kHz. But the frequency at the moment is 9965. Much better signals here, and obvious their aerials and new equipment is in operation. Bangladesh, not very often heard in this area, but at 1230, noted news on 7185 kHz. Radio Canada Europe, 2100-2159. 5925 is a new channel, but it hasn't been heard. It doesn't look like it's going to be put into operation. Our best reception for Canada at the moment is 9805 at 2100. In Indonesia, Radio Republic Indonesia, the signal on 3325 noted with news in Indonesian at 1200. Watching this frequency, Jonathan, because a new 10 kilowatt station in which will be known as Radio Northern Solomons has been scheduled for some months on this frequency, but so far hasn't appeared. Israel, they've only two frequencies on the air at 0500, and neither are any good in this area. They're using the channel of 5895, and that one runs into a problem with Croatia on that channel. The other one is the high frequency of 17545. Radio Japan, their transmission to this area, unchanged, 0700, 0900 on 11850. Broadcast from Norway, bad frequency allocation here at 1900. They're on 6195, causing severe interference to the BBC World Service, which we hear very well on that channel here in New Zealand because it's one of the lower frequencies that are in use. The Radio Netherlands transmission from the CIS, quite exciting reception on the low frequency of 4945. at 18:30 in English. They were heard before that hour in an English block, but that signal in the 60-meter band, quite good reception in our morning listening. From Thailand and Bangkok, they've moved to 7285 from 7260 at 1100 opening in Vietnamese. The move has allowed good clear reception of Radio Netherlands programs from CIS, which is on 7260 at 1100 in English. And Vietnam, Hanoi, they have been heard at 1100 with news in English on 9728 up to 9730. Signal is drifting. They seem to have an Australian newsreader now, and the news program is much more enjoyable with a good English-speaking announcement.
Finally, Arthur, time for one more tip. What have you got?
WGTG 9475. We're hearing this one after 0330 when Cairo leaves the frequency. At 0400, they announce in English and Spanish, and at 0500, the frequency is blocked by HCJB. But an interesting chance to hear this new station from North America, seeming to be operated at the weekends only.
And apparently the program is beamed at Mexico, from what I understand.
Yes.
Thanks, Arthur. Now, what's next?
Media Network Book Review.
And this time we've asked Nick Meanwell to page through a new edition of a standard work in the international radio field.
Passports to World Band Radios, compiled annually by shortwave publisher and broadcaster Larry Magny, together with a team of editors. The 528-page paperback appears in September each year, and just a little bit later in Europe, just right in time for the Christmas market. It has a direct, hands-on approach to shortwave listening, and it's a staunch supporter of the medium. Passport contains a complete idiot's guide to getting started in shortwave listening. It explains in straightforward language how UTC works, and it points out that listeners in North America need to be careful because the UTC day changes in the late afternoon or evening. There's a starter's guide to finding stations for the first time and switching on the radio. There are also recommendations for the first 10 stations. It's nice to see some of the faces behind the voices too. Passport has a panel which picks what it considers the top 10 shows for 1996. The choice turns out to be very selective, and although times are given for other targets, it's mainly geared to North American tastes. It's also limited to the English language. Our research shows that listeners have such a wide variety of interests that personal selections like this are actually not much use. The section about choosing a shortwave receiver, on the other hand, is useful. In the last year, the range of shortwave sets has stagnated. New models that were promised did not appear on time, so there's a growing list of radios that are coming soon, but a shortage of tests on sets that actually made it from the vaporware stage. Passport tests a pre-production sample of the low HF-250, though the photo next to the review is the HF-225. Low's come a long way in improving the design with its latest model. A sample of the Drake R8A is also subjected to extensive lab tests. The adverts in the book from Grundig were designed before the launch of the satellite 900 was delayed until May of next year. The ICOM R9000 is still listed, though it's now discontinued because of cellular phone restrictions in the US. Passport does not consider computer radio interfaces. In short, Passport tests 7 new sets this year and offers an in-depth white paper for some of these. Each costs $6 extra. 181 pages of this soft cover annual are devoted to the Blue Pages, that's a channel-by-channel guide to the shortwave spectrum. Passport sources in Latin America appear to be good, but some of the guesstimates for the international schedules for the summer of 1996 are woefully inaccurate. Since a lot of international negotiations going on behind the scenes to eliminate interference problems due to the low sunspot numbers, there are far more schedule changes than a few years back. Radio Budapest, Radio Finland, Channel Africa, Radio Vilnius, Call Israel, Voice of America are just six stations which have radically altered their schedules before the winter 95 schedules really got underway. Passport says that St. Helena will make another broadcast on October the 27th, which, in fact, was cancelled some months ago, whereas the revamped Radio Denmark broadcasts in English for January 1996 are not listed. On the positive side, Passport 96 has the usual Addresses Plus section. It's a mixture of official information sent back by stations and intelligence gathered in the field by people who've written to radio stations. As a result, there's editorial comment in between the lines. For example, severe criticism of Radio Flanderen International's policy of gradually switching emphasis to satellite. The entry for Radio Netherlands is a jumble of new information and text left over from last year. We've never had a Washington News Bureau at the address listed in Passport.
But it's easy to criticize details in an ever-changing world. Overall, Passport to World Band Radio is a worthy addition to any bookshelf. It costs $19.95 in the US, £14.99 in Britain, and the ISBN number is 0-914941-37-2. We received three review copies from the publisher, which we're giving away right now. To enter the draw, simply answer three questions.
Question number one.
What was the name given to a recent international broadcasting conference held on September 11th to 14th in Amsterdam?
Number two.
In what year did Radio Herreizen Nederland start shortwave broadcasts to Indonesia?
And lastly, number three.
Do you listen to Media Network on shortwave, medium wave, satellite or FM?
Just send your response in a letter or a postcard to Passport Contest, Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, 1200 JG in Hilversum, the Netherlands. You can also fax your entry to 31 for Holland and then 356724239. And the final possibility is to send email to media@rnw.nl. That's media@rnw.nl. I'll give you the fax number again. That was 31 356 724 239. Now your entry must be postmarked no later than October the 21st.
Media Network, the original communications magazine. Accept no substitutes.
I'll bet things are tense in Luxembourg at the moment because SES are just about to launch their first digital satellite, the Astra 1E. It's going to go up early Sunday morning, October 15th, on board the Ariane 42L rocket. The launch will take place from the European Space Centre in Kourou, French Guiana, somewhere between midnight 38 and 01:56 hours UTC. If the launch window is missed, they'll try again the day after, Monday morning, October 16th, same time, same place. If you have a satellite dish that can receive the Astra satellite system, you can watch the takeoff of the Ariane rocket live as it happens. Try transponder 46, that's the one used by Nickelodeon, on 11.156 gigahertz vertical polarization. The subcarriers 7.02, 7.20 and 6.5 megahertz will give the commentary in English. There'll also be live coverage of the event on the Space Night program on Bayerischer Rundfunk. That'll be in German. You can find that on transponder 45, 11.14125 gigahertz horizontal polarization. After all the testing of the onboard systems, Astra 1E will be co-positioned at the orbital location of 19.2 degrees east. Astra hopes that the satellite will then enter service towards the end of the year.
Also this weekend, from the 13th to the 15th of October, there's a convention in the Airport Hilton in Atlanta, Georgia, USA, aimed at shortwave listeners and scanner enthusiasts. Called the Grove Expo, it's organized by one of the United States' largest shortwave radio dealers.
There are also stands from other companies, amongst them a company called Kiwa Electronics, based in Washington State. Craig Siegenthaler says that this week they'll be launching a loop antenna for the tropical bands.
We reviewed a medium wave loop from Kiwa some time back, didn't we? I recall it was branded as the Rolls-Royce of loop antennas.
Yes, I think that's fair. What Craig has done now is to make a loop covering the range 1.8 to 7 megahertz, as you'll hear in this phone call.
Well, we'll be showing our latest loop antenna, which will be a tropical band loop that tunes 1.8 to 7 megahertz.
But looking at the diagram here, it looks very different to the one that you've issued before. It's much bigger to start with.
Oh, yes, yes. This is an antenna that's 1 meter square. And the reason why we went to that size was due to the fact that the atmospheric noise is so much lower in around the 6 to 7 megahertz range. And plus, we wanted an antenna that had the sensitivity to capture signals that was comparable to beverage antennas. And so we went to a 1 meter size. Now, this poses a completely different set of problems as far as being able to ship something, certainly. And so we have this antenna that is completely collapsible. It folds up like an umbrella. It basically mounts on a camera tripod or a VCR tripod that the customer supplies themselves. So it has all the features of a loop antenna where you can rotate the antenna for maximum signal strength, and or you can rotate the antenna and tilt it to eliminate local interference.
According to the diagram, though, you also have to connect another antenna, a whip antenna, too. What's that for?
Yeah, well, it's basically the design is a three-loop design. There's the main loop, which is 1 meter square, and that captures the main signal. And then there is a pickup loop that's all approximately 9 inches square, which is centered in a corner of the antenna. And that is a electrostatically shielded loop antenna that goes to the preamp that basically drives the receiver, the signal to the receiver. And then within the 9-inch loop, there's a 2-inch loop. And that 2-inch loop provides the ability to bring in an external antenna. You can then mix the two signals together, coming from the main loop and an external antenna, be it a dipole or another active antenna, or in this case, we also have a position where you can bring in a beverage antenna with a high impedance antenna input.
So this is an antenna for very serious tropical band listeners.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's designed, it has the sensitivity, it's extremely low noise, and it's designed to be able to capture the low-level signals that the people that are DXing the tropical band would like to see.
So how much is this going to cost? Because, I mean, it's quite a big construction when you've assembled it all.
This will be similar. We haven't done the exact pricing yet. It's still too early to finally get that set up, but the price will be comparable to the medium wave loop.
Which is at the moment?
Which is at this time $360.
Now that means you'll need a communications receiver to make that kind of investment worthwhile. Many medium wave listeners swear by the loop antenna principle because you can separate two stations operating on the same frequency but coming into your location from different directions. You just swing the loop around and one station fades away as the other comes out of the noise. There's an art to using the loop though, tilting it can also help. What will be interesting from the launch this weekend is whether the tropical band loop offers the same sort of nulling effects as the medium wave model. For us here in Northern Europe, remember, most of the tropical band stations come in from the same direction, namely the south. Craig acknowledges that an indoor loop will only be a better choice over an external antenna if the vicinity around the loop is electrically quiet. That means if you have a television set, a computer monitor, or a fluorescent tube in the vicinity, weak signals will simply be buried in the noise.
The loop antenna can be rotated to eliminate one signal source of interference, but it wouldn't be able to null out two at the same time, two different signal sources.
If people are interested in more information, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, we can be reached at our normal mailing address, which is Kiwa Electronics, and that's 612 South 14th Avenue, Yakima, and that's spelled Y-A-K-I-M-A, Washington, USA 98902.
We were talking to Craig Siegenthaler of Kiwa Electronics. And that brings us to Mike Bird in Melbourne, who has the propagation review of the last 7 days. Mike.
Diana, last week was a pretty poor week for shortwave propagation. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux ranged between 70 and 82. The average works out to 73.8, which equals an effective sunspot number of 10, and that is up 2 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 45 and 13, which represents minor storm to unsettled conditions. From Wednesday the 4th through to late on Monday the 9th, the geomagnetic field was either stormy or active. The cause was a coronal hole on the sun. Since Tuesday, the magnetic field has been generally unsettled.
And what about between now and next Thursday, October 19th?
Well, Diana, we've got everything crossed. IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will be low, but there is a chance it may increase. Sunspot region 7912 has grown very rapidly during the past 24 hours and has the potential to produce flares. Hopefully, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled. That's if sunspot region 7912 doesn't produce any surprises.
Thanks, Mike. And that's where we close the files for the moment. More from the team around the world, as well as from Jonathan and myself, in 6 days, 23 hours and 29 minutes from now.
Media Network, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks and Diana Janssen for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.